You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. The program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. That's 3CR in Melbourne. It is broadcast live across the country, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Okay, let's move on. If you're wondering what anarchism is all about, anarchos without rulers. Not without rules. It's not the US of A in 2025, where the buffoon does what he likes. It's a society without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggles, the struggle to devolve, share power, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. That's what it's all about, boys and girls. That's what it's all about. That's what the anarchism is all about. Sometimes I wonder what planet I'm living on, but, well, they tell me it's planet Earth, but maybe it's another parallel universe. Because it's been an extraordinary week. It's been an extraordinary week regarding the myopic visions of the major political parties in this country. Now, I'm going to do something I shouldn't do, but I'm going to give the National Liberal Party a little bit of advice on how to decrease energy prices and reach net zero by 2025. I'll repeat it again. I'm going to give them a little bit of advice, and I'm sure the ALP would like this advice too, on how to decrease energy prices and reach net zero by 2025. Because you can have your cake and eat it, although we're told we can't have our cake, let alone eat it. I'll give you an example. During the last election, I think Mr. Dutton was the leader of the Liberal Party. They were talking about state-funded, publicly owned nuclear power stations. And the Liberal Party was more than happy to use billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to get a nuclear industry off the ground. So I assume that means the Liberal Party isn't totally against public ownership. Now, I didn't notice, as I've been saying for a number of years now, the Liberal Party is no longer a Liberal Party. It's basically a concoction of myopic members of Institution of Private Affairs. I'm not going to use the word public to describe them, and their media backers, both in the virtual world and the real world. So, how do you decrease energy prices and reach net zero by 2025? You do the exact opposite to what the current government is doing. Instead of pumping billions of dollars into private corporations to set up wind farms, solar farms and hydroelectric networks in order to reach net zero by 2025 and relying on the private sector to do it for us. And the thing about the private sector is it needs to make a buck. And if it has monopoly on the creation of energy, whether it's coal-driven or driven by the sun, in many regards is irrelevant. What they will do is use that monopoly on the fact that they own those means of producing energy to maximise profits for their major shareholders or the owners of that particular corporation. I mean, that's the nature of capitalism. You know that. It's private investment for private profit. So what do? You do exactly opposite of what's happening today. You can do two things. you can actually provide funding to local communities to set up their own energy producing networks. And at the same time, to balance the shortfall, because you just can't rely on local communities to provide energy for everybody, you can also have publicly owned solar farms, publicly owned hydroelectric generation schemes, publicly owned wind farms, and the list goes on and on. It's simple. It's so simple that I cannot believe that because of ideological blinkers, that neither the Labor Party or the Liberal National Party is willing to venture down this road. When you have enterprises which are owned by local communities or the government of the day, it's not necessary they make a profit out of providing essential services. And energy production is fundamental to a 21st century society. So my advice to both parties and to you is to understand that it is possible to reduce energy prices and reach net zero by 2050, right? It's quite possible. It's possible. It can be done. All we've got currently, the problem is that what we are seeing is particular vested interests manipulating sentiments in Parliament in order to promote their particular ideological bent. So if the Liberal Party last year was willing to use billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, to fund a nuclear power industry to provide, they said, reliable and cheaper electricity or energy to the Australian people, what's wrong with using the same philosophy, the same ideology, to create massive solar farms and wind farms to provide alternative energy and reach net zero by 2050? Think about it. It's easy. You don't need a PhD. You don't need to be a professor. You don't even need to have passed high school. It's a simple equation. It is so simple. Let's move on. Now, if you live in Melbourne, there is a critical comedy festival coming up at the Unitarian Church in East Melbourne on Saturday the 29th and Sunday the 30th of November. And the reason I raise this is that I thought the critical comedy festival had come forward. They changed the dates to the 18th and 19th of November, but I'm wrong. Now, I understand that the Victorian Liberal Party has elected a new leader who they believe will take them to victory at the next state election. I think it's on the 29th of November or the 28th of November next year, in Victoria, that is. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, are these people, these 43 or 44 people that made the decision to, throw out their last leader after 11 months, have they really got round the campfire and are singing in unison? Now, let's not forget, let's give you some idea of how noxious relationships are in the Liberal Party in Victoria. Totally noxious. Now, we had a former leader defame one of their members. And instead of resolving the issue internally and the leader offering an apology, they took it to court. So the former leader was bankrupted, right? Now, remember, these people are sitting around the same table yesterday making these decisions, right? The former leader was bankrupted. And because they were concerned about losing the seat of Hawthorne in Melbourne, the Liberal Party loaned Mr. Pesutto $1.5 million, okay? It wasn't a gift, it was a loan. Now, the same faction within the Victorian Liberal Party has taken the matter to the Supreme Court, arguing that the executive of the Liberal Party in Victoria does not have the authority, the constitutional authority, to give this $1.5 million loan to Mr. Pesutto. So here we have, I think it's 43 members, sitting around this table, you know, making a decision yesterday to elect a new leader, because the former police officer, Mr. I think it was Bannon or Bannister, I can't even remember his name. It's been one day since he was demoted and I can't remember his name. But that was the problem. And they decided that they would go down the path of change, transformation, generational change. And I'm thinking, do they really think we're a bunch of total morons and idiots, that we're going to be, you know, swayed by daubing a new coat of paint on Liberal Party policies in Victoria? Obviously, this new coat of paint has a bit of glitter on it to catch our attention. But listening to the new leader, yes, I've listened to her on your behalf, obviously, I'm just amazed. I am really totally amazed. Because you've got to understand, the Victorian Liberal Party is controlled by the same people, ideologically, who control the National Liberal Party. And obviously, they like to put out candidates which they feel would be acceptable, this is leadership candidates, acceptable to the general public. So I think of this as the Liberal Party in Victoria applying a new coat of paint to their policies. But this time there's a little bit of glitter in the policies because the leader is younger, she's female, she's fresh, she's only just been elected to the Victorian Assembly, so hopefully she hasn't got all tainted with all the old factional disputes in the Victorian Liberal Party. But then I was thinking to myself, it's a little bit like when you go look at a rental property, isn't it? The last tenants have left, whack on a new cheap coat of paint, and you walk in and you walk around, and before you know it, your foot has broken through the rotten floorboards. Before you know it, you see the cockroaches under the sink. Before you know it, the window frame falls out. Before you know it, you switch on the electricity and the air conditioner isn't working. It's the same with this change. If the Liberal Party needs to be elected, it really needs to provide an alternative to what is increasingly becoming a tired corporate Labor Party in Victoria. So, did I hear any policies regarding public housing? No. I did hear policies about making savings, and unfortunately, I felt a bit sick. I heard Mr. Kennett, I thought he'd gone to heaven, but obviously he's still around being interviewed, and he was waxing lyrical about the new leader. And obviously, remember when the Kennett regime came into power? The extraordinary cuts which occurred in public assets. I could go on and on, but think of it, as I keep saying, think of it as this. All it is the Liberal Party in Victoria whacking on a new coat of paint with a bit of glitter in it, hoping against hope that people don't see that their policies haven't changed. I call it a lost leader. You know, you go into a supermarket, not that I do that often, but if you go into a supermarket, there's always a lost leader. You go in, you get this thing and it's big savings, then you walk around the supermarket and you buy this shit, and by the time you get out, you've been fleeced again, all right? It's the same with this. It's a lost leader. The new leader, you can change leadership, but what needs to occur is a change in policy. These are the people that are against the treaty. These are the people that can't bring themselves to say net zero 2050, and the list goes on and on. I don't have to explain who they are. So what I'm going to do over the next year, because I do live in Victoria, and I encourage people in other states to do the same thing, it's important that we as activists fight back on every day till the next state election. I'm not asking you to vote for a particular candidate or vote at all, but I'm asking you to fight back. And using ridicule as a tactic is a very effective tactic, as we see in terms of the buffoon in Washington. Ridicule can be a fatal, can be a fatal, cause a fatal blow. So I'm interested in policies. Do the policies that have been talked about decrease corporate power? Do the policies they talk about increase individual liberty? Do the policies they talk about provide for people who've been exploited in our community? And the list goes on and on. And if those policies don't fit those criteria, they're corporate friendly policies, it's important that we don't just walk away and say ho-hum, but that we actually go in there and fight to highlight what these policies actually mean. Because you won't see this happening in the legacy media. And you won't see it happening to a huge degree in the virtual media, which can be easily manipulated. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. This program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. You can access the podcast. Very easy to access the podcasts of Anarchist World This Week. Now, I don't know if you're very familiar with South American politics. I mean, we used to all be very familiar with South American politics. In the 1960s, the 1970s, when the USA used to think of America as its own junkyard, you know, and they'd be coup after coup, dictator after dictator would be put into place. You know, activists would be murdered by regimes which you know, were told, you know, supported the US government. See, there are issues in certain South American countries, and those issues are related. Those issues are related to drugs. I mean, it's a very profitable business. Anybody who thinks that an addictive substance is some type of revolutionary rebellion needs their heads read. But the fact is, it's a very, very profitable business. And if the people who use your products fall dead, doesn't really matter. There's always somebody else waiting. So in Ecuador, we have seen an increasing instability created by drug cartels, which are basically using Ecuador as a transit point to supply the West, including Australia. Because we seem to have insatiable appetite for things to temporarily alter our consciousness. Now, the Ecuadorian president was a bit concerned because there is real instability. The Ecuadorian president was a little bit concerned. So, what did he do? He held a referendum. And as they used to say in the old days, you never hold a referendum unless you know what the result's going to be. So they had a referendum about 2 days ago. And the referendum was very simple. The Ecuadorian people had the opportunity to vote to allow foreign bases, it'd be United States bases, to be established or re-established in Ecuador. So here we are, the Ecuadorian people, faced with drug cartels and US bases. What did they decide? What do you think they decided? Obviously, there would have been a huge campaign funded by the United States of America to ensure that the referendum passed. Because what you do is you create fear. We see this in Australia, you know, crime, crime, crime. You create fear and you manipulate that fear to get people to take a more reactionary path. So what did the Ecuadorian people do? You know what they did? They said, we prefer drug cartels to US military bases on our land. Unlike Australia, which has a number of US military bases, and we continue to support the US war machine in this country, hoping against hope there'll never be a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, because we'll be obviously those bases will be directly impacted by any ensuing war. So the Ecuadorians said, no, thank you. We prefer to deal with the drug cartels than have to deal with United States troops on our soil. Fascinating, isn't it? Let's move on while we're in South America. Piracy on the high seas. You see, people have got this romantic view of pirates, you know, these men mainly, and some women would go out on ships and rob other ships and distribute to the poor. Oops, I had a slip there. Look, most pirates were basically supported by particular entities. The British were huge supporters of pirates, especially if they, attack Portuguese ships or Spanish ships or French ships. The French were huge supporters of pirates. The Portuguese and the Spanish were all huge supporters of pirates. But apart from the Somali coastline, we haven't seen much pirate activity recently. But we now see a campaign which has been instituted by the buffoon in Washington, the turd in the Washington punch bowl, that he thinks that Venezuela is the centre of drug trafficking in South America. And he's given an executive order that if they see any boat that looks a bit suspicious, they'll blow it out of the water. At the same time, they're massing ships around Venezuela in the hope that there will be a local revolution to dethrone the current government. Isn't it extraordinary? I think it's 73 people who've been killed now in the last few weeks in small boats, not frigates or battleships or aircraft carriers, but small boats by the United States of America, and we just shrug our shoulders. So piracy on the high seas. We've got back to the real good old days when pirates were funded by the governments of the day. And talking about piracy on the high seas, I think it'll give the United States a little bit cause for concern when they see that Ecuador has decided, as the Ecuadorian people have voted, not to have US bases on their soil. Because if they think they've got overwhelming support in South America, they don't. Let's not forget they've just given Argentina a $40 billion handshake in order for the government of that particular government to be re-elected, because that government suits their political purposes. Let's not forget that the buffoon-friendly government in Brazil was voted out in the last few years, and that if they want to up the ante in Central and South America, they may have issues. Let's move on to local issues. You know, I could wax lyrical about what's happening overseas, but what can I do? What can you do? If it's about using our troops, well, Australian troops to conduct exercises for other nation states, well, that's a different matter. But at least we can highlight what's happening.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. As I said, it's Comedy Week. CSIRO, Commonwealth Serum Research, whatever, all right? They've been around, I think, for about 100 years. They're one of the few organisations which is independent, publicly owned. It's done an extraordinary amount of research over the years. Has saved the lives of tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands of people, not just in Australia. Groundbreaking research. Publicly owned entity, ALP government nationally, and what's happening? What's happening to the CSIRO? Well, Commonwealth Serum Industrial Research Organisation. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but that's what I think it means. Commonwealth Serum Industrial Research Organisation. Well, the CEO, poor CEO, has been asked to rein in spending. Now remember, the CSIRO is not a state government entity, it's a federal government entity. And in his wisdom, the science minister has agreed that it would be in the best interests of CSIRO to fire, let's use the old-fashioned word, fire 350 researchers. Close down whole departments. This is more than a 20% cut on its activities. And the government of the day sits on its hands. When you hear the chief executive, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, you know, I knew this was on the cards, you knew it was on the cards. When the chief executive is asked whether funding, federal funding, would resolve their issue, the poor chap skirts it, but it's obvious that he believes that federal funding is essential, especially when he says, you know, these days we're trying to get kids or younger people, younger Australians, to do STEM courses at high school and university to join the scientific community. Who's going to do a STEM course when you know there's no jobs in the public sector as far as research is concerned, that you're going to be some type of agent for some type of private corporation, you know, trying to do something to maximise profits for, you know, their major shareholders? Well, you've really got no independence in terms of the type of research that's carried out and how it's carried out. And that's the difference between the CSIRO and a privately funded institution. A privately funded institution in research will do research on issues that will bring them a profit. That's understandable. That's what they're about. That's what corporatisation is about. That's what capitalism is about, private investment for private profit. Who blames them for doing what their DNA tells them to do? And their DNA, capitalist DNA, tells you to make a profit. And if you don't make a profit, you go down the gurgler. Look at how skittish the world stock markets are, you know? I know I'm digressing, but look at how skittish they are. They think maybe artificial intelligence has been blown out of all proportions, the positive ramifications, and they're getting a bit worried because they've put trillions of dollars into artificial intelligence. And then look at the pharmaceutical corporations. If you can create a medication which millions, tens of millions of people need on a daily basis, well, that's where you put your research. But if there's something like, you know, motor neurone disease, which affects only a fraction of the population. Why would you bother to put money in that research? Because there's no money for you. Even if you spend money and you find, you know, a cure or a way to ameliorate issues related to motor neurone degeneration disease, why would you bother? Why would the board bother? Because there's no money to be making out, to be made out of it. It's just extraordinary. So that's what CSIRO does. It allows people to do research which has benefits, not just in terms of health, but in terms of industry, for the population as a whole, but may not make a profit at that particular point in time. This is not a failure of CSIRO. It's not a failure of the chief executive. This is a failure of a federal government which has continued to push a privatisation agenda despite using rhetoric about Australian manufacturing, assisting Australian manufacturing, and the list goes on and on. This is a total failure of federal government initiative, and to see the science minister come out and support the cuts and not fight within cabinet to increase funding to the CSIRO, you begin to understand the type of country we're in. And it gets worse. So why isn't there enough funding for CSIRO? Why do we see the Grattan Institute put out a report that says public hospitals could save $1.2 billion a year, which is piddling, which is nothing when you look at the public hospital budget, you know, and spurious ways of actually saving money by chucking people out of a hospital the same day they have a knee replacement. But the list goes on and on. So why? We have, was it 27, 28 million people living on a resource-rich continent? We've got huge agricultural exports. We have huge mineral exports. We have one-third of major corporations not paying any tax. We've got mining companies, some privately owned, some on the stock market, making extraordinary profits and paying peppercorn tax. So no wonder there's never enough money for public institutions like CSIRO. And in the Victorian theatre, no money for public housing. Well, there's money, you know, to support private housing. You know? Why is never any money for state-funded energy infrastructure, which is essential for any society? Why leave it in the hands of the private sector, as we spoke about at the beginning of this program? And that's the problem. There may not be enough funds, but there aren't enough funds because parliamentary authority has been usurped by that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Because the revolutionary slogan over the eons has been land and liberty. And when I speak about a definition of anarchism, a society without rulers, I talk about power and I talk about wealth. And land and liberty is about, land is about wealth, liberty is about power. And when you allow minuscule minorities to dominate the infrastructure that theoretically represents you and your interests, you find yourself in this situation where there's never enough money for anything, even essential. Now, 24 hours, or maybe a little bit longer, I was looking at Al Jazeera, I think, on SBS, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, fine, good. We know about the genocide. Fine, good. And all of a sudden, all these ads crop up. You know, SBS has been partially privatised, and they need ads in order to, you know, the government made the decision to, you know, this is, the Howard government. And the first ad was for a private charity, which was raising money. There's nothing wrong with this. to send Australian kids to public schools. I've spoken about this before. Here we have a free, universal education system in the public sector, and we have a private charity who have got nothing against trying to raise, get sponsors, and they wanted 15,000 sponsors to help Australian kids access public education. And I think to myself, what planet do I live on? And then the very next ad was from another private charity, I think this was a religious-based charity, talking about the 28,000 homeless children who are living in tents around this country. This is in Gaza. It's not Sudan in the middle of a civil war. You know, it's not some godforsaken dictatorship like North Korea. This is Australia. And here we are, having private charities trying to fill the gap. And then it gets worse. We had the ABC, I don't know if it's nationally, but in Victoria, raising money for a charity so it can provide food to Australians who can't access enough food. And I'm thinking to myself, what planet do I live on? What sovereign nation state do I live in? What's going on in this country that we're reduced to this? And we're reduced to this because we've allowed it to happen. We have allowed it to happen. We have believed the garbage that comes out of their mouths. And when people cast ballots, they're not interested in a radical alternative. They want the status quo, thinking that if you work up the right channels, genuflex, doff your cap, kowtow, that somehow at the end of the day you'll get all the goodies you deserve. Well, about the only goodies you will get is 6 feet of the earth. But unfortunately, in Australia in 2025, 85% of Australians who die are cremated. So they don't even inherit the earth. As we're told, the meek will inherit the earth in the Bible. The meek will never inherit the earth. Those who inherit the earth are those who are willing to use violence, lies, to justify their existence and their exorbitant wealth. How can anybody justify corporation or individual making billions of dollars of profits from other people's suffering? But we, as a people, we've been worshipping at the feet of Mammon. Sorry for the biblical analogies. We've been worshipping, thinking that somehow, if we invest in the right thing, if we've got money to invest, disposable income, use our little tax advantages, that somehow we will have the live the life of Riley. And then we see our children and grandchildren struggling just to put a roof over their heads, having to pay for their education. That's unless you're part of the 8% investment class or the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. No wonder I think I'm living on some godforsaken planet, maybe Mars or Venus, not planet Earth, and not in Australia. I mean, there are excuses for a lot of places on the planet. They've got a lot of people. They don't have many resources. They've got authoritarian governments which have no hesitation in, you know, executing, shooting people. Tell me about that. Wasn't it good to see the liquefier in Washington being hosted by the buffoon in Washington? This is the liquefier from Saudi Arabia, Prince, whatever his name is, because obviously the buffoon has a lot of investments in the Middle East, especially Saudi Arabia. And when some reporter asks, well, what about what's his name that was killed in 2018 in the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul, dismembered, liquefied. And let's not forget there is an Australian connection. One of the liquefiers was actually a pathologist, doctor pathologist, who was trained in Melbourne. Good to let you know there was a Australian connection to these things. He says, don't embarrass our guests. he was kind of an unusual reporter, that bloke, although I think he was reporting for the Washington Post. And, you know, things happen. Things happen to unusual people, as we see in the seas around Venezuela. All right, let's move on. I could continue ad nauseum with this, but I'm not going to. It's the same. I'll just mention it just for a minute, the public health debate. Currently, the government is saying they're renegotiating. You like that? Renegotiating the amount of resources they'll provide to states to provide public health care. All right? And they're saying they want savings. Savings. See, things are so desperate in some public hospitals that I'm aware of. You go on a list to get an appointment. And that way they can say, well, we don't have a five-year wait for a specialist. It's only 3 months because you don't get on the appointment list. But because things are so dire, okay? And the federal government is saying, well, you need to make savings. And the Grattan Institute comes out with its little garbage at $1.2 billion. They say, well, in Canada, one in four people who have a knee replacement are evicted, in inverted commas, from a hospital within a day. It's only one in 200 in this country. Oh, I'm not going to go on. Let's look at something. Well, I've got two negative things I want to speak about. I think I'll leave them till the end. And one interesting positive thing which you can participate in. Doesn't matter where you are in Australia. Now, a lot of people say to me, why do you waste your time celebrating the Eureka Rebellion? And they say this and that and this and that and this and that. And I say, have you actually ever looked at the history of the Eureka Rebellion? Have you looked at what it was about? Oh, it was about gold mining licences. It was about small business people complaining they had to pay a gold mining licence. And I said, look, have a look at it. There's a lot of stuff been written about it. One book I recommend is John O'Brien's book, Massacres at Eureka. And there's many other things. But so Eureka, the essence of the Eureka Rebellion is encapsulated in the Eureka Oath. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. That's what it was about. And there are four essential elements to the Eureka Rebellion. One is solidarity. It's about people facing oppression, coming together to struggle against that oppression. It's about internationalism. Now, the racists in our community, you know, the Hitler spawn, I call them, Hitler spawn, or Adolf spawn, let's be pleasant, I don't want to denigrate Mr. Hitler, do I? Adolf spawn, somehow many people in the Adolf spawn brigade think the Eureka Rebellion was about white Australia. Well, I hate to tell you, there are about 18 nationalities involved in the Eureka Rebellion. That the first man who was tried for high treason was John Joseph, a black American slave from ex-slave who came from New York to Victoria to make his fortune. His grave is in Bendigo. It was interesting during the Biden era. We saw a ceremony conducted in the Bendigo Cemetery to highlight his importance. And the list goes on and on. I could talk about the fact there was an international brigade in the Eureka Rebellion, that it wasn't about colour, it wasn't about religion, and it wasn't about the other. It's about who had their foot on their neck. So it's about solidarity. It's about internationalism. It's about direct action. When Parliament refuses to listen, when authorities refuse to listen and use extrajudicial power to try to control reform movements, That's when direct action is the only way forward. When the Eureka Rebels were involved in the Eureka Rebellion, but what they were about was using direct action to circumvent the power of the authorities. And last but not least, and something that most people don't understand, is they used direct democracy to run their campaign for justice. They held monster meetings where they elected delegates who went into Melbourne to negotiate with the government of the day, and those delegates went back to these monster meetings to, you know, report back. And these weren't monster meetings where you had PAs, where people had to project their voice amongst huge crowds, in some cases up to 20,000 people. So the essence, what we celebrate, Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion Celebration Groups and Ballarat and Western Regions Trades Hall, what we celebrate is the central elements of that rebellion. Direct action, direct democracy, internationalism, solidarity. Simple. So if you're interested in any of these concepts, once again, we've been holding celebrations in Ballarat on Eureka Day since 2002. This will make it the 23rd, or is it the 24th celebration. Starts at 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. for the dawn service. After that, we have a joint picnic next to where we have the dawn service. The dawn service was held at the corner of Eureka and Stall Street in Ballarat, near where the cannons were placed in 1884 to mark the 30th anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion. So we will be there. At the same time, after that, we'll be going to Bakery Hill, where the Eureka Oath was taken on the 29th of November, 1854, and we'll be handing out 6 Eureka Australia medals, not to people whose names you may be familiar with, but people who've done the hard yards, done the work for decade after decade after decade. They've been responsible for initiating and progressing many of the reformist agendas which have occurred in this country over the last 50 years, but have never been recognised. We will recognise those people on that day. So if you can't make the 4 a.m. ceremony, I'd just like to remind you that between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m, the dawn ceremony will be broadcast live on Community Radio 3CR in Melbourne, 855 on your AM dial, and also will be streaming live on 3cr.org.au. After that, we go along to the Old Ballarat Cemetery, to the mass grave of the Eureka Rebels, to pay our respects. Then we have a light lunch at Ballarat Trades Hall in Camp Street in Ballarat at around 3 p.m. I'll be doing a presentation regarding the Eureka flag at the Eureka Centre in Ballarat. And that evening, starting at 6 p.m, we'll be having a dinner at the Queen's Head Hotel. Not the Queen's Hotel, but the Queen's Head Hotel in Ballarat. Now, we've only booked 20 seats. So if you'd like to take part in the dinner, please give me a call so we can book you in. There's no cost. You just pay for what you eat and drink. People pay for their own consumption. So if you ring me on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489, and make a booking as soon as you can, because the 3rd of December is only 2 weeks away. All right, let's move on. We've only got a few minutes, but let's move on. One, I am concerned regarding the new military alliance between Indonesia and Australia, which has just been signed, which nobody, very few people know what's been signed. But my concern is that as the move for West Papuan independence gains momentum, that this treaty will be used to involve not just Australian weapons in that struggle, but will be used to allow Australian troops to be deployed to West Papua. I know it sounds far-fetched, but when you've got a military alliance where each nation state claims it will support the others in terms of its integrity been under threat, then anything is possible. So we've now reached a stage, you know, as convener of the West Papua Rent Collective, which, you know, funds the office at 838 Collins Street, and I'd like to thank all those people who turned up on Sunday. Great crowd. The thing is that we're entering a new phase in that particular struggle where we could see more Australian advisers and troops, and possibly even troops, the situation gets more volatile than it is, being deployed to put down that movement. So we have to be aware of this. I know the Gaza conflict and the West Bank conflict has put this particular struggle out of people's minds, but it's essential we keep it. And Gaza, if you think the buffoon's peace plan was all about a ceasefire, was all about the people of Gaza and getting supplies, was all about the end of the genocide of the Palestinians, I recommend you listen to an Australian, the head of Medecins Sans Frontières in Gaza. Listen to her tell us how the genocide continues, how food is restricted, medical aid is restricted. The fact is that very little has changed, and this idea to have foreign forces in Gaza is not about protecting Palestinians from Israeli aggression, but using forces sympathetic to Israel to carry out Israel's program in Gaza. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Don't forget, if you want a book for the dinner, the Eureka Dinner on the 3rd of December, Wednesday the 3rd of December, call me on 0439 395 489. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano, tells you many of the events that have been organised. You can go to YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. If you're sick and tired of being pushed around, I recommend you join Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. Go to PIBCI.net. And another YouTube channel, if you're interested in history, is josephtoscano.com. That's Australian History. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station. You can send me emails at anarchistage@yahoo.com, info@pibsy.net. We even respond to letters. You can write to us at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access it. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. And remember, hope is the love child of desire and expectation, not the desire and expectation of the Victorian Liberal Party to win the next state election, but our desire and expectation to create an egalitarian community in our lifetime. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.